At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And Swerve Strickland, after making his AEW debut just about a month ago, makes his Talk is Jericho debut tonight. He's got stories about his run with Lucha Underground, including the inspiration behind the Lieutenant Jermaine Strickland character and the evolution of his masked character, Killshot. He's got some thoughts on why Lucha Underground got canceled as well. He talks about his time at the WWE, the formation of Hit Row with Ashanti, the Adonis, Top Dollar, and B-Fab, what led to its demise and Swerve's ultimate release. He speaks to the fallout from the social media rap during Hit Row's feud with Jinder Mahal, his relationship with Triple H, what he learned from Shawn Michaels, and the feedback he got from William Regal. And Swerve talks about coming to AEW, how it happened, and what he hopes to accomplish now that he's here. Swerve just went to the Grammys as well, explains how that all happened and how he ended up befriending one of Kanye West's producers and songwriters. You hear all about Swerve's music as well. He's a very up-and-coming rapper, and the rap cypher that he did with WWE. So Swerve Strickland coming up, and also coming up, the release of Fozzy's new record, Boombox, Friday, May 6th, just a few days away. Pre-order it today wherever you buy and stream music. You are going to love it. I think it is the strongest album of our career, and I think it's going to be a huge smash and take us to the next level. And we've been having a great time, speaking of being on the next level, in the Save the World Tour. It's one of my favorite tours I've ever done. And on Thursday, Cinco de Mayo, we're in Los Angeles at the legendary Whiskey A Go-Go on the Sunset Strip. Tomorrow night, Thursday, May 5th, once again, come rock with us at the Whiskey. It's going to be a huge show. And then the next night after that, Friday night, Garden Grove, California, at the Garden Grove Amphitheater. Saturday, we're at Roseville, California, at the Goldfield Trading Post. San Francisco on Sunday night at the Great American Music Hall. And Monday, May 9th, in Reno, Nevada, at the Virginia Street Brewhouse. More dates after that in Colorado, Kansas, Arkansas, and finishing it off at Pops in St. Louis. There are tickets available. Go to FozzyRock.com. And also, one of the greatest, best VIP meet and greets in the business. We play a mini set for you. We do a Q&A. You can see our Q&As on our Instagram story. You ask whatever you want. We sit right in front of you and talk to you and hang out. So go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket and VIP information. And stay right here for Swerve Strickland dropping rhymes and telling tales right here on Talk is Jericho. All right, so here with Swerve Strickland, and the first thing, just jump right into it, I have to ask you a question.
Yes,
about,
sir.
You were at the Grammys.
Yeah.
And I was
yeah.
like, that was pretty freaking cool. It looked like you had a pretty good spot there.
It was amazing. And like, so how that all came about was like, after I was like, oh, I had like my 90 days and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to sit home. I'm going to like reach out to my resources and contacts, see what I can really get into. So I had like one dude, I went out to LA. He's a big businessman, knows everybody. So I was like, I'll spend like 12 days out in Hollywood. Give me the contacts, whatever. If you can do the introductions, I'll just take it the rest of the way. Right. He's like, oh, cool. Yeah. So he just gave me all these contacts. I reached out to like 30 people, maybe got like 8 back, but that's still good
that's
odds.
Not bad.
That's still pretty good odds in Hollywood and stuff like
very
that.
Very good odds.
That's not bad. So one of the dudes was like a writer for
right.
Kanye West for the Donda album, the Donda 1 and the second one that came out. So one night I was hanging out with him and he was like, hey, we're going to go to the studio. I was like, okay. So we drive to the studio like 1:30, 2 in the morning. 2 o'clock in the morning, we end up in like my man Prophet's studio. And he's like, we're recording your entrance song. I was like, wait, what? I was like, entrance song for where? I don't have a destination where
right,
I'm going.
Right.
I have some contacts I reached out to, but so we made my entrance song right there. he ended up producing two songs for Kanye West's Donda album, and that they both won Grammys for. So he was like, hey, we're nominated for the Grammys. It's like, so we're going to the Grammys or whatever. Want to come through? So I was like, okay, cool. So I did Dallas WrestleMania weekend and did the Ring of Honor show. And then the next day got on the plane and went to Vegas, and I was at the Grammys with him.
So tell me how that, because I've done a few of those award shows, but what was it like? Tell me about the experience of being at the Grammys.
It was cool. Like, there's like the two different type of red carpets. There's like the main red carpet where the Justin Biebers and the Billie Eilishes and all them walk and all that. So, and there was the other side where like those are production and the people that like support and make sure those guys are the stars and stuff. And that was like also the pre-award ceremony where they're like not every, you know, award gets on the main show, like,
yeah,
you know, best
heavy metal,
yeah, yeah. Hip-hop rap album of the year was in that.
No kidding.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, rap album of the year and like best
wow,
there was a crazy category like best alternative rock hip-hop / reggae and all that stuff. All those awards are over there.
Yeah,
so we end up like finding out he won the two awards by like a text. So he was like, hey, you won. Yeah, you won on both records. We're like, oh. So we're in the hallway walking into MGM, like celebrating while everybody's like shuffling past us and stuff. So it was a really good experience. But it was real, like, we saw like Lil Nas X walk through. He did the pre-ceremony thing. Met Malik Youssef, who wrote the College Dropout album with Kanye and helped write Graduation and like pretty much every Kanye album. He's been like right there with them. Cootie, who did the documentary for Kanye on Netflix, I met him. It's like, it was just cool just being like integrated in that system.
Now, do you rap as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes. Yeah.
So have you recorded some stuff with those guys or on your own? Or
yeah, they did my entrance song and I rap on that.
So you rap on the entrance song?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Excellent.
It's a collab work with them. He's also just sent me like 12 beats that he's like, hey, like, let me know which ones you feeling, man. I'm like, this is a Grammy Award winning like producer that's just sending me beats, just like, hey, check these out, see what you feel. I'm like, all right, cool. So we're about to do some more work in the future with them. I have three albums out on
right
Spotify now.
Yeah, actually. That's amazing.
Yeah,
it's interesting to me talking about how writing a rap song works. That you mentioned sending you the beats.
Yeah.
So, and we'll go into wrestling in a couple seconds. But so yeah, tell me how that works, because obviously with rock and roll, it's a riff or it's a melody line for a lyric that you might have. But hip-hop's more based around hearing a beat that you connect with?
But it's not too far off from rock, because rap has evolved so much that so many different genres come in to mix it, to make it like it's almost the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's people sampling like Pantera, and there's people sampling Suicide Silence, and like Devil Driver. That's sampled in rap music now. Like if you listen to the Donda album with Kanye, he experiments with that a lot.
Hmm.
There's a lot of hard guitar synths in there. He has Marilyn Manson on like some of his on his concerts and stuff like
right,
that.
Right,
but I'm
right,
pretty
right.
sure he produced and did a lot of writing and stuff. He like the thing about Kanye West isn't just a person, and guys, other artists like that, they're not just a person. They're a whole organization.
Oh,
it takes
right.
like 20, 25 people to create one like chorus or something of a section
right,
of a
yeah.
song for a Kanye West.
Because you see that quite a bit if you look at a song and who wrote it. There'll be
yeah.
seven or eight writers
yeah.
on it. You're like, how the hell does it take eight guys to write a 4-minute
yeah.
song?
And like hip hop, it's like 2.5 minutes now. So,
wow, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. it's like songs are getting shorter because people's attention span, they don't want to hear this. But then you got like Tyler Creator, who just let songs, just beats just ride, and he's just changing the beat and it's going up and then it's back down again and like this, and it goes on for 6 to 8 minutes.
Mm.
But that's what his specialty is, and like people go to him to hear that. They want to take that journey musically and sonically with him. You know, some other rappers are just wanted like, all right, 2.5 minutes, we out, next song.
Right.
You know,
how was it for you writing a song though? We've talked about he sent you some beats, so what do you do
yeah.
with those 12 beats?
When I hear the beat, I try to see what the story is of the beat.
Mm.
I got to hear like the intro, what's the build up to it? Where does the beat drop? Where does everything, like the, where's the bridges connect? Can I take that bridge? Can I put it in the beginning and stuff like that? What can I rearrange this to make my story? So I kind of let the beat tell me what to say.
Mm.
You know, I'm like, this beat's like telling me, this sound is saying something like, I feel like roses
okay, roses is going here. Yeah, roses, cool. Flowers, flowers, give me my flowers. Flowers is like, okay. So like it's kind of takes you on that voyage of it. It's like, it's almost like looking at a, like you stop, you're driving, you stop, you see the scenery, and you stop and you look at the scenery. The scenery's telling you the story.
What does it inspire you to think, yeah, right? Like, that's interesting.
Know? Yeah, so music's the same way to me. So that's, and that like really literally shifted my wrestling philosophies as well.
In what way?
Honestly, letting not the, we all say let the crowd dictate the story and like what's your story, their match and all that. Mine is like, okay, what does this person make me feel? This individual that's like, and I don't have to predetermine it. I just like, no, how do you make me feel? How does this individual make me feel? Not you, me. So therefore my match is already different from with this guy than any other match he's ever had with anybody else in the locker room because he made me feel this way.
Hmm.
So therefore I go through matches like, oh, like I never seen him work like this because, oh, he's working with me now because he's giving me a different feel. I'm giving him a different feel. So that's my first thing, emotion I try to capture with anybody I'm in the ring with, you know? And so and that's the same way with music. What's that first thing? Was that first like sound that you hear?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I feel this way about this song. Okay, but I feel this way about this song. I feel this way about this beat. I feel this way about this instrument. Everybody feels something different. And it's the art is and the beauty of it is finding what your story is to that sound, that beat, that riff. Are we going to take it up? Does it make you feel sad? Does it, happiness, joy? Is it somber? Is it like there's all these different things just off of one little sound.
That's great.
And that's the story.
You know, I always say that with a promo or a match as well.
Absolutely.
For me, it's like, what's the tone of what I'm trying to get at? I mean, maybe the words aren't there yet, or the high spots or the finish, but what's the tone of this segment? Is it serious? Is it a squash match? Is it meant to be a classic? Is it, you know, jokey? And then kind of everything kind of falls into place from that. So
right.
It's kind of a similar idea.
Yeah, you kind of like take what's given as well. After a while, like you're not like you don't have the full plan, you have the idea, but then as you're going into it, you're feeling it. Now you're feeling it's going to take you into a different way. And oh man, oh, something was given to me out of here. Let me take something from that and let me go dive into that because, like, is this the same with music? It's the same with comedy. Comedians, like, oh, this guy laughed at this. Okay, let me dig into that
focus
a little more.
Yeah,
and then now the rest of the crowd wants to dig into that. So, like, there's so many different things about like just entertainment.
You have to pay attention.
Yeah.
You know, this whole sports entertainer thing that I'm doing right now, it started when I was with Eddie Kingston in Bridgeport, and we had a face-to-face, and he said, this is pro wrestling. You want sports entertainment, go down the road, right? And because we're in Bridgeport, people started kind of like, the way they reacted was that they were showing disdain for sports entertainment, and I was like, oh,
yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if I could use that as a heel. Yeah. Only because you're listening, like you said, what are you given from this audience? So that's smart to think that.
Yeah, and then like people want to be in on everything who's watching at home.
Mm-hmm.
So if that crowd's reacting in a certain way, then the next city you go to from watching it at home, they're going to be like, well, I want to join into that like reaction and the finger pointing and the belittling and badgering at this act that we're going, you know, they're performing. Like, so you tap into that and then you see what city you can tap in from them. From those emotions, from that audience, then the next city you find, and then people are watching at home are all being educated and watching that stuff.
You know, it's interesting. One of the reasons why I like doing Talk is Jericho is getting to know people, and we just met a month ago or whatever
And
10 minutes into this, I'm already thinking this guy's very smart. Very, very smart guy, the way you think about the business, and you understand the whole concept of what it is, which is another reason why I'm so surprised that I'm very happy that you're here, but I'm surprised that you were in the position to have to come to AEW after being let go from WWE. But let me just ask you, what was that situation? Because to me, Hit Row was pretty cool. Much like, oh God, what was Bobby Lashley's MVP?
Oh, Hurt Business.
That was the coolest thing. And then they break them up 2 months later. Hit Row caused a lot of cool waves in NXT, come to the big roster, and it's done in, it seemed like a month or 2 months. It might have been longer, I'm sure it was. But so how did that feel for you? Because obviously you mentioned when you had to do new ring music, you didn't even have a destination. So obviously it kind of took you by surprise.
For me, it was the first thing was like when we did the draft, we were there in Baltimore.
We did a dark match, and we had AJ wrestle Cedric. But before that, we had like a 2-minute promo live, like all four of us. They just wanted to see how we interact and stuff like that. They didn't even ask to hear it. They was like, oh, no, you got 2 minutes. Go do your thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's rare.
Very rare. For all four of us.
Wow, yeah.
Four people with a microphone.
And who were all four of you again? It was you.
It was me. Tahuti was Ashanti the Adonis. AJ, who was Top Dollar. And Brianna Brandy, who was B-Fab.
Gotcha.
And so, like, we just, like, had we had some lines tucked away. So we had 2.5 minutes, literally. Bing, boom, 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 boom. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Blah, 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 boom. And then we wrapped it up. And then they had the match and everything. Edge was like one of the first people to greet us in the back. Said like, we need this like product. We need this on this brand. You know, this is the great content that we need. Mm-hmm. It's young, it's hip,
it's hip,
like, youthful and stuff like that. So we're like, oh, cool. And then like the following week, I forget what city we were in, but we flew out. We did like another backstage promo with New Day without Biggie. Biggie was on Raw with the WWE title. And then the week after that, we were getting flight information, and then Brianna didn't have any. And we were like, wait, what's going on? So, like, AJ called to make sure everything with flight was in, flight info was good and stuff. They said, no, this everything's good. And we're like, she's not needed this week. We're like, okay. And then, like, on the flight, literally mid-flight coming down, your phones start buzzing and everything. We see that she's released along with, like, a bunch of other releases and all that stuff. And we're just like, what?
Because she's a big part of the act.
Yeah.
And she's a wrestler too, right?
Yeah. Especially as a female that can talk with the guys in the group as much and like pals around. Like, it was like super like.
It's like a Wu-Tang thing, right?
Yeah. It's like, it's like the whole group. This is our Nicki Minaj right here.
Right.
You know,
right.
To our Young Money. So that kind of like put a damper on a lot of things. And Tahuti had he ended up getting his appendix removed. So he couldn't wrestle for like maybe another 3 weeks. So it was like me and AJ that were having to like wrestle, get in the ring and stuff. And then AJ, apparently him calling and contacting them, asking about flight information for Brianna and all that, that was like a no-no and stuff. And so we had a talk with Vince and Pritchard and Laurinaitis, like in the hallway of the arena. It was like a little bit of a scold session, but at the end it would turn into be like, it was like, don't worry, we got a lot of fun stuff. It was, and then Vince, you know, starts laughing and everything.
So you said
like
a scold session?
Yeah, like a little scold.
What were they scolding you about?
About basically just AJ, like,
is he dating her?
No, no.
You just standing up for the.
Well, we
team.
Wanted to.
What happened?
Yeah, travel together, making sure everybody's good. And, like, if it was like somebody else on that was flying
she's
out,
she's part of your act.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's like our sister.
Yeah, you know? And you got heat for inquiring what happened with her?
Yeah, so, but it was like mainly on like AJ and stuff, and then he was like, no, you don't do that, yada, yada, yada. But then it turned into a positive way of like, hey, this is what we're going to do tonight, something with Sami Zayn, it's going to be awesome, it's going to be fun, we're going to have a good time, whatever. And we were like, okay, all right, cool. And that was all we heard of it. Then we did something the following week with Jinder Mahal and the rap performance type thing in the back. And then Jinder responded in a rap. And then AJ did a social media rap thing. And it was deemed offensive.
Oh, right, right. He said something about him being Indian or something.
Yeah,
or
he used an Indian instrumental beat and whatever. Right. And like it was seen deemed offensive, and he didn't get clearance for that. And, you know, the red tape you got to go through to clear certain things you want to do individually on a social media platform.
And meanwhile, this is the same group that had 2.5 minutes with an unrehearsed promo that did a great job.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, well, that didn't air and go anywhere.
But. Oh, okay, I gotcha, Because I remember seeing that tweet, and it didn't really seem all that offensive, especially with the context of the argument they were having on Twitter.
No, and, like, Jinder approved it. He thought it was funny. He thought it was great. He's like, yeah, sure. And so they didn't get approval, and then we were getting travel for Survivor Series. Then it went away, and then it got back that we were doing, like, SmackDown. And that was it. And they were like, no, then that went away. Then we're doing SmackDown Raw and Survivor Series. I'm like, okay. And then literally an hour later, we got calls from Laurinaitis saying, no, we're all let go. So it was just really weird.
That's so strange, man. I don't get it. Did you ever, I mean, obviously there's an underlying factor here. Did you ever figure anything out or hear anything about the reasons?
They said it was just the heat, within that. I guess there was contract negotiations with that I don't know about.
Oh, gotcha.
So like I feel like everybody individually was like had different things that just they felt like, you know what, overall, like there's no point in having the whole group together if there's going to be this person, this person, this person. Mm-mm. They just throw the whole thing away. So they were done with it.
The baby out with the bathwater is what they say.
Exactly.
Because it's interesting to me that it's like, well, what did you do wrong? I mean, you didn't come in there as a gang. You came in on your own with a 10-year whatever career prior.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I felt defeated about it. It's just like, dang, like I felt like I let family down. Mm. I felt like I let like all this grinding and like having these talks with Triple H at NXT. Like I was like making sure I was like cut in front of people and get to him by myself like 3 or 4 times in my tenure there. And I had serious conversations with him.
What kind of things did you guys talk about?
Because
he was a huge mentor for all you guys there in NXT, correct?
For me, it wasn't Triple H as much. Like, Triple H felt like a boss to me.
Gotcha.
Like, and it's no slight to him or nothing like that. It's just like...
He was the boss, though.
He was the boss. And I treated him like a boss, and he treated me like an employee. And he enjoyed my work and what I contributed to the show and my talents and stuff, but I didn't have the warm, fuzzy conversations like a Ciampa would have with him.
Gotcha.
Like a Cole would have with him. Okay. With a Finn. Finn can show him like stuff, his workout equipment at home, and they laugh and all that. I wasn't doing all that with Triple H. For me, like, I would cut him off and be like, I want to be one of your guys, one of your go-to guys. I said that day one. He's like, oh, for sure. Like, I see you as like one of those guys. I'm like, okay, cool. He put me in like big marquee match or whatever, NXT or Worlds Collide. It was our 4-way in Houston, the big Houston Rockets arena, whatever. Kill it. I'm like, I want to be one of your guys. I always looked him in the eye and said that to him. He's like, you are one of my guys. What are you talking about? I'm like, no. And like, I know when you're committed to somebody and when you're like hesitant. Why are you hesitant with me? I always asked him that straight up. I was like, don't hesitate with me because I'm going to make you look stupid at the end when you hesitate. And now everybody's going to be like, where was this guy the whole time? And that's what ended up happening when Hit Row kicked off.
Right.
I was like, make me one of your guys. Don't hesitate. Like, then there was a time, the last conversation I had, he was like trying to duck off and go to get his car to get to his private jet. I was like, oh, no. Because I got hurt the week before with a hamstring thing. I was out for like 4 weeks, nothing crazy. And I was like, okay, so I'm hurt this 4 weeks or whatever. I'm going to come back. I'm going to do something different. I wasn't asking permission. I was telling him, I'm doing something different. I'm going to veer more to like being more heelish and more like aggressive. And this is what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, okay. Like, just get with Johnny Russo and you're going to write it out. Make sure you put in an email for him. He's going to send it to me. I'm like, all right, cool. You can do whatever, but this is what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I came back. The hair was changed. Hair color was changed. I had bikers. I went to the long pants look, put the grill in my mouth, did a different jacket. I'm like, I'm giving a whole different vibe. And I walk in for TV that week and Terry Taylor was like, oh, wow. Oh, this is different. Mm-hmm. This is unique. And Regal was like, he's like, oh, the grills, that's bloody brilliant. That's bloody brilliant. I wish I would have thought of something like that. Oh, that's bloody
Regal with the grill.
Yeah.
Oh, for you.
Yeah. No, for him.
He wanted him.
Yeah, he was like back in the day, when he was doing his tours in the UK, he's like, I wish I would have had a grill. I would have just mean mugged everybody. Oh. So I was like, okay, if I got him to react like this, I can get anybody to react.
Mm.
Sure enough, me and Jonah had our match back and forth. Honestly, the person that really co-signed me and what things took a huge like upward shift for me was Shawn Michaels.
Okay.
Shawn was like, I got a promotion one day with Bloom and Canyon, and I'm in their office, and he's like, because I'm not afraid to let you know like something's bothering me, especially if it's justified, and especially if I know I can deliver on it. I'm like, I'm going to let you know. I'm like, no. Like,
that's the way it should be, though, right?
Right.
You should be able to talk and say what's bothering you.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, there's a difference between bitching and whining about it.
Or having a conversation saying, I don't understand.
Yes. Yeah. Like being an adult.
Right.
Like going with profession, giving the proper respects to people. I'm military. I understand that.
Right. Exactly.
So I understand like chain of command. But I'm going to still be like, hey, like, I want to be put with this and this and that. Like, thank you for the promotion and the financial side of this, but I also want that to match what I'm doing on television. Like, I don't want to just be paid to be here.
Right.
Like, no, I want to be paid to perform here.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he's like, well, Shawn Michaels' office is right there. I was like, okay, bye. Went to Shawn. I was like, hey, can I have some time with you on Tuesday whenever you have time? He's like, sure. Send him a couple matches. He actually liked me and Darby. He liked me and Darby from
an indie show, and me and Riddle from an indie show. And he's like, this is where we need to be with you. I'm like, you think? Yeah. Like, so he was like texting me while they were in the meeting, saying like, hey, this is what they want to see next show, whatever. This is what they're saying about you, next match or whatever. So
that's great. A
notch. I'm like, that's it. Mm-hmm. Got it. Next match, me and Jonah went 2 segs, 12 minutes, beat the crap out of each other. He's like, that's what I wanted to see. That's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It's like Sean like smacking me on the ass. Like, there we go. That's what I'm doing. Now you're in there. Yeah. And then we did the takeover, stand and deliver with the gauntlet match. I started first, went 25, lasted to the end with me and Jonah. Put Jonah over.
What was Jonah's name there?
Bronson Reed.
Bronson Reed, right. Yeah.
Did the big splash. Stephanie McMahon comes to the back and is like, you are like my favorite heel on this show.
Nice.
Like, literally, she said, I'm her favorite. I was like, well, Trips, you hear that? So just like, I just love like proving like when I have a, that's like kind of what drives me all the time. Why I always feel like I got to do more, because I feel like people don't see the potential that I see. And they shouldn't, because
it's your vision.
Right.
Yeah.
It's mine. And I want to, but I see so much, and it's like frustrating when somebody else doesn't see an inkling of it. So I always got to just be like, oh, I'm going to show out. I'm going to prove why you're missing out on this. I always want to do that. And that's just an emotion I always have.
I remember the first match that you had here. We talked about it, and there were some things that I didn't really like.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about it is, and this is what I instantly like, I like this guy, is you came back with, well, check out this match, or you sent me another match that you had, or here's my thought about it. And sometimes, and I don't know everything, I'm just telling you my opinion. That's one of my jobs here.
But it's perspective, just, and that's what we need.
Be straight, right? Be straight. This was good. I didn't see this. I didn't like it or didn't care for it. But then you came back and said, well, what about that? And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And then you did something the next week that we talked about that was really getting the groove, you know, and I was like, this guy cares. And you know, a lot of our guys here do, but a lot of guys in the business, if you tell them something, they just don't listen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that to me is always like one and done for me. I'll give you my perspective. This is 32 years on the job, kind of knowing what's up. Here's my opinion. If you want to take it, take it. And the guys that take it, I always like, spend a little more extra time with.
Absolutely.
You know, and it sounds like Sean was probably the same, and the guys you're talking about, because they know that you care.
Yeah.
If you don't like this, how about that? If you want me to change this, then how about I do this? That's what I always did too.
Yeah.
And that's how you get respect from people who go, look, I want to help this guy even more, because you do need help.
Yeah.
You don't know all the answers yourself.
I would never say I made it this far because I did it all on my own. No, like I've had help through, like I have two little girls, like the mothers that take care of them. I always make sure they're set, because without them and their support, I don't have to worry about what's going on at home.
Right, right.
And like, I don't need to, like, they give me like little phone calls saying like, hey, she did this week and yada, yada, yada. I'm like, okay, that's easing off my mind. Now I can put 100% focus on like all these other things to make sure they're good and stay good. And when they grow and all that stuff, they can go to college and all that. There's a process with that. But if I'm like not taking criticism, or not taking like a critique, just like a little something simple, if I can't take that and like take that as fuel and or as a tool and make that and shift it and make myself get better at this, then like just I don't deserve to be where I'm at. I don't deserve to continue going if I can't like just reevaluate.
So how did you end up going? You mentioned that you know, Sean's on your side and you're having all these great matches, and I know you're a North American champion in NXT. When did you finally get the call up? And what was kind of the story behind that?
We did the Great American Bash rap cypher.
Great American Bash, which one?
So they had Great American Bash.
Yeah.
When I won the title, because Hit Row, we were hot, right? Like,
so you were Hit Row in NXT.
Yes. So after I had that match, the blow-off match, me and Leon Ruff had
Leon Ruff, okay.
That's what we had our blow-off match.
Gotcha.
And that's where we introduced like everybody in the group on camera for the first time. Before that, I was cutting these promos week by week in the studio and like the backstage curtain off studio thing. And Triple H was like, his direction was just like, no, take away the script. Don't give him a script anymore. Let him just go. And I was like, okay, cool. So I'm taking like little lines and little mannerisms from like film and motivational speakers and like the podcasters, like Charlamagne the God is like one of my favorite people to listen to,
and he always has like scriptures that he reads off of or something that he read. He has these lines and stuff.
Is he a comedian? Is he a rapper?
No, he's a disc jockey.
Disc jockey?
Yeah.
I've heard that name a lot. I wasn't sure what he did.
Yeah, he's a media personality. Gotcha. He interviews like rappers every week on Breakfast Club.
He's got a podcast and everything.
Yeah, Brilliant Idiots and stuff.
Gotcha.
And so he's just everywhere. He said this line that he said, like, one of the things my father always told him that he said was just like, you don't want to go to war with someone who cares less than you do. And so I was like, I heard that in a podcast and I used that in a promo and people like that stuck out to him. It was my first one by myself.
They're right.
So people were tweeting it and quoting that line over and over again. So I credit Charlamagne the God for that one. And so I was like listening to other stuff, other movies and stuff, just taking lines and just putting in my own like rap. Like I was changing my voice the way I would talk too. Like I put like a lot of like emphasis on a lot of like little things that are like I want people to look a year before and look at me now. Mm-hmm. It's two completely different people. Mm-hmm. Like I'm walking different, I'm talking different, I sound different. It has to be completely different.
Reinvention.
Exactly.
That's how you get longevity.
Yeah, that's what Sammy Callahan always told me.
Yeah.
So I watched Demolition Man. I took Wesley Snipes, Simon Phoenix character.
That's great.
And I took that and it just warped it. I'm like, he's a villain, but I can't keep my eyes off him. I want to see what he does next. He's doing some horrible things,
right?
But I can't stop watching him. So I was like, that's what I'm going to go with. And I just took that. And so that got us to building the group. Triple H wanted to put the Hitmakers, put it with me. And we came up with Hit Row.
That's a great name.
Oh yeah,
love like, that name. Yeah,
so it was like Death Row,
yeah, and Skid Row,
and hits double entendre there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we won the title. I always say we because it was like literally a 4-person act on that whole match that culminated to like the title win. So it was
right.
Like Hit Row won, not like Swerve won. Hit Row literally won, and then we did the following week. It was the network special. It was a Great American Bash. And they were like, we're going to do a hip hop cipher. And they had this idea, like have all these rappers behind us and all this stuff. Like you have rapper friends, bring them in. They're going to do this. And then they're like, okay, we can't do any of that. So now we're going to have you guys just do a rap cipher. All right, we're going to pre-tape it right in the back parking lot or something.
What's a rap cipher?
A rap cipher is like a group of artists are in a circle or whatever. You're just letting your...
Like a rap off.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
but it's like, they're not battling each other. Mm. It's like more of this like showcase.
Collaborating with each other.
Yeah.
Like I do a line.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like I do like 36 bars or something. Or
just all improv rap?
It can be improv, something you've written before. It's just a showcase of it.
Gotcha.
And then that next person, they step up with a different beat, or it can be all a cappella.
That's cool. Yeah.
So like I can show you afterwards like
I'd love to.
Some of the best like cyphers I've seen. I'm like, good God.
Yeah.
So they put like the Statue of Liberty statue behind us and stuff. Everybody, so they had, and Tootie doesn't rap, so he doesn't, we had him like, you're the producer of the group.
The hype man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we put him in a DJ booth behind us, scratching records. There's nothing playing at all. But he's just like, but he plays it all so well. That's the best part about it. So starts off, Brianna starts off the cypher. She kills it. Then AJ goes different beat, hard gangster rap, talking about moving packs, pushing this, that. I'm like, we're saying this on the USA Network. Some of this content went over their heads because we rehearsed it like 12 times before the show, and they were like, "Yeah, we're good."
They didn't know the terms.
I'm like, "Are you sure?"
Yeah.
So he's doing that, and then I break off into like a double time fast rap for like 36. I think I did 24 to 36 bars or whatever, and just went off and then shot the lights go out. Then our song starts. Then we do our entrance song.
That's cool.
So that's like not that easy to do live.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cyphers are pre-recorded and taped. But we did it live. Wow. And then we had to do our show. Then we did our song performance live around the arena.
Oh, cool.
Live all together, all in sync. And we killed it. And I think that's when Smack, they were like, we need this on Fox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They saw it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think we were like, right before the main event too, and it was just like I don't think that anything like that to that capacity has been done on WWE television. Mm-hmm. So I'm like really proud of that. If there's any mark I leave, like NXT will never have anything like that ever again.
How long were you guys on SmackDown?
Like literally a month. Like,
yeah, I remember it just came and went
October
so fast.
October 12th was like when we got drafted, and then we were like, oh, November 18th.
So when you let go, you get let go, and obviously you're probably mm-hmm. super disappointed.
Yeah.
What happens then?
I listened to our whole album that night. Like I went on IG Live and just like played the album. It was just like looking up, researching. I was just thinking, but mm-hmm. I wanted to hear our music and the other songs that we had coming out later on. That was in November. So then I was just, the first contact I made was with Rocky Romero in New Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, hey, what can we do? What can we make this happen? Yada, yada, yada.
Right.
But then like my cousin, Will Washington, he got a message from Tony Khan. He's like, when's his 90 day up? So that was like the next day.
Does he know Will or how is he?
Yeah, he does Rap City.
Gotcha.
Podcast. He gotcha. Does like a lot of the media scrums.
Ah, okay. Here. Oh, cool.
So
gotcha.
So he's my cousin, but funny thing is we didn't know each other till like about 6 years ago.
Oh.
But I was one of his favorite wrestlers for him to write about and to like follow on the indies. And he was like, hey, and his dad just walks in. He's like, hey, who's that? He's like, oh, yeah, this is Shane Strickland. He's like one of my favorites. I mean, he's killing on Lucha Underground. He's like, you know that's your cousin, right? He's like, wait, what? That was like 6 years ago. He's like, wait, what? Yeah, like that is Strickland. That's your Uncle Steve's son. He's like, wait, what? So we guess how we became cool and close. And now like every wrestling event, every big like event, like I always end up running into him. Mm-hmm. We always like share a picture, time with each other, talk. We talk back and forth. We talked last night. It's really been... has been pretty cool.
So that was kind of the bridge to get here. And then obviously Tony contacted you, and it was pretty quick turnover.
Yeah. Yeah. Very quick. I met with him at his hotel, like I think like after February or something like that. Like, and we talked for like an hour and a half, and then like the last 10 minutes of it was about wrestling. Like that's how like cool we like really meshed.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about football. I'm a huge football fan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So. Gotcha. So how's it been for you here so far in AEW?
Oh, it's been great. It's been great. I feel like the first day I was getting eyed up a little bit, which okay, cool. Like this is the high this
new
is high
kid level. In class.
Yeah, I'm like, I know you. We wrestled like 3 years ago. What are you talking about?
Right,
yes,
right.
But it's supposed to like you're supposed to get that feeling. If I don't, if people are like too nice with you, then like I don't feel like I'm a threat. Then I always want to feel like okay, like. Yeah, but we want to work with him. But at the same time, like, yeah, careful because, like, he's for real.
Mm-hmm.
He's for real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want that. You want a little bit of that feeling. Like, that's like walking onto a new football team. Like, hey, y'all better be ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm working, so y'all better work harder.
Right.
You know?
So, but obviously you knew a lot of the guys because you mentioned from being, you know, on the indie scene prior to that, MLW and everything else.
Yeah.
So was there a different vibe here than from WWE?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, just from management itself.
Mm. In what way?
Just, like, it was just easier. Like, there wasn't too much, like, I was talking about earlier, not a lot of red tape you got to go through too much. Like, we got to get clearance. Oh, we got to speak with so-and-so and so-and-so to get that cleared and yada, yada. I'm like, I just want to, asking about a social media post. Like, but we got to go through this office and this channel and this, and bring it up there, then it has to come back down, then it has to get approval, and, like, it's none of that. It's just like, oh yeah, talk to that guy right there. I'm like, hey, how's it going, man? Hey, can we just like, yeah, sure. I'm like that right there because like I like it to do a lot of like media pushing with like projects and people that I have coming in and the connections. That's a big important thing for me. Just like how easy can I get this done and who do I got to talk to? I don't want to talk to the assistant to get a phone call to go through this and leave.
It shouldn't
a message.
Be that hard.
Yeah, I don't want all that. Like, who do I got to talk to if I don't if it's too much, I'll do it myself. And then I'm going to get in trouble. Mm. And y'all not going to like that. So I'm just like, give me the direct contact. That, like, for me, is a whole new world for me. And I love it. That's what
you just expect to just be creative.
Yeah. Let the creators create.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Or hold them up. Don't hold them up too much.
Yeah. I mean, to give a direction, point the right direction. But that's one thing that I noticed here was, and I've talked about it a lot, was just, like you said, to get away from the script system of WWE was almost like I thought I was like getting away with something at first here. Was like, you don't have to get any approval. It's like, well, no, what do you want to say?
Now, question about that. Do you think like scripts do help certain talent out?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I feel too.
Yes, but I think the talent has to be involved in writing that script. Right. You know what I mean? I think that we could probably use some kind of a, and Tony would kill me for saying writer, but some kind of an assistant, shall we say, or a accomplice that is his goal, his job is to go to some of the, you know, younger guys that haven't had a lot of promo experience.
Right, collaborative efforts.
And so, yeah, what would you like to talk about? Maybe you can say it this way. I do it all the time. I did it with Brian Pillman. I did it with Dante and Darius when I worked with them. It's like, it's okay to have somebody with more experience explain how you can put things together and cut out the fat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't let everybody go out with no tether, because not everybody's equipped to be able to do that.
Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel the same, too. I feel like some people, you'd be surprised how much of that collaborative effort can actually get people's brains sparked.
Absolutely.
And really, like, flush it that they didn't even know about. But just having that person with them, like, oh, man, okay. Now, I figured it out.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
When I worked with Jimmy Jacobs, was writing in WWE for a while.
Jimmy's a great mind.
Great mind. And we still had to get our scripts approved from Vince. But we wrote them together. So here's my voice. You got any ideas? Let's try it this way. Let's give it to him. And then they'd make a couple little changes here and there. But I always felt really you could get a little bit more perspective with somebody else working with you.
For
sure. Because when it's just you, it's like producing your own album. Sometimes it's like, hey, you might want to change. No, I'm producing it. It's my album and I'm doing everything. And maybe it's okay to have somebody collaborate with you.
Comedians do it all the time. I always go back to like the parallels of like what we do in comedians, because I feel like we're both live acts.
Exactly.
So like I feel, and you're always getting, how you know you're doing good is the reception of the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So comedians is like, I feel like that's the hardest job of doing this. They sit with their other comedians and their friends or their people that are like their assistants. They rattle off those jokes to them, because like if it's funny to you, it's your content. You got to know if it's funny to this guy,
right?
This short guy, this tall guy, this single girl, this good married point. Couple, this black married couple, this, like, that's a lot of different demographics in your crowd that you can't just be, oh, I laugh at it, so I'm going to say it and it's good,
right?
So you need like other people. Like I think that's where criticism comes in, understanding and allowing criticism.
And critique, I think, is the word that's like, criticism almost has a negative connotation, whereas critiquing it is just the pro.
I still think we need criticism, too.
Is criticism good?
Yeah. I think criticism's, yes. Because, like, we get criticized every freaking week for what
we
do.
Right, sure, sure, sure.
Like, we see it, like, not everybody's going to like what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of still want to get a gauge for how you want to operate and move forward. You know?
No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, and you also want to filter it to understand, like, okay, this isn't going to be for you, but I know who this is for.
Sure.
You know?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how were you able to keep Swerve? I love that name. I loved it for the first time I heard it. It stands out to me.
Yeah.
Because obviously Swerve is it sounds cool. It's also a term in wrestling.
Yeah.
Swerving somebody, fooling somebody, tricking somebody. It kind of has a lot of cool connotations.
I honestly use the hip hop version of it.
What's that?
So, it was like back in like 2009, 2010. No, like 2010, yeah. Kanye, one of my favorite artists.
You're a big Kanye fan, yeah.
From through and through. So him and the Good Music people had a song come out, and it was like Mercy. And Big Sean was like the hottest dude at the time. And he kept saying Swerve. Lamborghini, Mercy, Swerve. And I was like, yo, this is so smooth and so fire the way he says this. So I was like, now my name is Stephon Strickland. And I was like, oh, what about, I didn't like two syllables. Like, I read your book years ago. So you remember you talking about like the syllables with the name?
Yeah.
You wanted like Chris Jericho,
Eddie
Guerrero,
you
know, like Shawn Michaels and stuff like that. So I was like Shane Strickland. So I shortened it. And I had a cat that ran away when I was younger named Shane. So long story. Perfect. Don't want to get into it.
Got it.
Sad. But so I swerved. I was like, that fits really cool right in there. Shane, so instead of like Sugar Shane or like a boxer.
Yeah. Right.
So I was like Shane Swerve Strickland.
Yeah.
So that's how that.
But
came
you
about.
Used that because you had it pre WWE then.
Yeah.
And then so you're able to use it after.
Like they were really good with that with me. They were like, oh yeah, we're just like we signed this. We're leasing it to us, but it says this doesn't work out and whatever, and you leave, it's right back to you. I was like, okay, cool. So they liked Swerve. We needed to do the name change.
Sure, sure.
So I went with Isaiah from Isaiah Rashad, one of my favorite artists, and Travis Scott. And so Isaiah Swerve Scott.
That's great.
So, and they were like, we love it. It's cool. So
I met Travis Scott once, and this is a true story. This is back when he was dating Rihanna. Was he dating Rihanna? He was dating somebody like that. Somebody, or I can't remember who it was exactly. And I met him through Wale.
Right, yeah.
And he... This is not fronting. He couldn't speak. He was too nervous to meet
me.
Too nervous to meet me. Dude. And this was before he blew up. He did the I think he did the BET Awards that weekend. And that was kind of
his... He did the rodeo album then.
Right.
With the big truck?
Yes. Yeah. And that was kind of his big breakthrough, right?
Yeah.
So that was huge. That weekend, he was like, oh, this he's going to be huge, Travis Scott. Yep. And he's like, hey, man, I can't believe it's Chris Jericho, man. I don't know what to say.
Dude. So when we were in Orlando at Revolution, my guy Flash and Heck.
Yeah, I met a couple of your guys.
Yeah. So Heck, he's Diddy's A&R. He meets like the best artists in the world all the time. He flies to Dubai with Wayne on his private.
Right.
Lil Wayne on his private jet. He was like, dog, I got chills meeting Tony Khan, bro. Like, I like chills, like, oh my god, meeting Chris Jericho, meeting Sting, like, oh my god, like, I've got chills, like, dude, you're like, that's like, you, these are icons, of course, in our industry, but like, you're meeting like the crazy icons in the music industry, but he's like, yo, they cool and all, but these guys, man, oh my god, man, thank you for this. I'm like it's just so funny, the parallels, like,
yeah,
it's crazy, like, I would lose my mind meeting a Travis Scott,
right?
Like, well, lose my mind.
So it's funny, you mentioned something that you came from a military background. I know you were actually in the military. So how did military, which is very regimented, how did that lead to pro wrestling? Was that something you always wanted to do?
I was doing both at the same time.
Okay, wow.
It was like, okay, so my first like year as being a man was rough. Like as far
first
as like,
being a man?
As far as like going, like leaving high school.
Gotcha.
And start entering manhood.
Yeah.
Like, so my mom like... super supportive. She was there at Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's always supported this. But like, as soon as I graduated high school, she was like, boom, you got to get out. You got to do something. I was like, okay. So I went to 2 weeks after I graduated, I went to military, like went to literally a boot camp in South Carolina.
Oh, wow.
Did 9 weeks of that. Went to Georgia, was there for 22 weeks. And I didn't come home till I was like 2008. Didn't come home till like 2009 of February. So I came back, I worked a job in like UPS, hated it. I literally, like, if I don't like something, I'm just like, ugh.
I'm out.
I'm done. Oh, yeah, 2 weeks notice? No, I'm leaving now.
Yeah, now.
Like, right. I'm out. Like, so I like literally like dropped stuff. I didn't show up to work. I ended up moving down. That was in Pennsylvania. This is like York, Pennsylvania, Central PA. So graduating high school, I graduated Donegal High School in Lancaster, and I was like 20 minutes. I live 20 minutes from Adam Cole.
Oh.
So we grew up in the same area and graduated.
Oh, okay, well, yeah.
So we've known each other since 2010 and stuff. So that's a story in itself.
Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Lancaster.
Right?
That's also like York, PA was like the Rich Swan area.
Okay.
I'm trying to think who else. There's some other guys that came up, like Joe Gacy, who's killing on NXT right now. That area.
The Chameleon Club.
Like that era just groomed. Like, I don't know how.
We used to play there all the time. They just shut it down during the pandemic.
Yeah, the Chameleon. Yeah. Yep. I wrestled there.
Did you?
Yep. So, ended up moving from Pennsylvania. Just grabbed all my stuff and a big old TV. Moved down to Richmond, Virginia. Slept on my mom's couch. Started wrestling training that week.
Hmm.
She paid for my first month tuition. And then, like, I got a job working at a cemetery. I was literally like, I wasn't touching bodies or nothing like that. I was just like, oh, there's some brush over.
Oh, yeah, you had to clean up corner. The grave sites.
Or yeah, so I was just like picking up sticks and like driving around. It was like 4 hours of wasting time, but she was like, I know where you are. You're making money. Like, you're monitored. You're good. Like, my mom was just always like, she puts you out there, but she's not too far off. Mm-hmm. She has some connection to what you're doing. Same with the military. Like me and my older sister, we're in the same unit.
Oh,
so she was my sergeant.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So my mom set it up that way.
All right.
I don't know how. Like, my mom jumped around on a lot of different like jobs. She sold houses. Then she went to recruiting people in the military. Then she sold insurance. Then she worked at a funeral home. And all that.
Sounds like a kids movie. Sergeant Sis.
Yeah. Like, she had a job in every field, and I don't know how she does it, but like, her grind and effort is, I think, where I get mine.
Rubbed off on you, right?
Yeah. So my first year of turning 18 years old, started wrestling training, military, got a job, went to school at ITT Tech for drafting and design, and found out my ex-girlfriend was pregnant. Mm. So that's when my oldest
gotcha.
Coming into the world. And this is all at 18 years old. Yeah. So I'm just like, okay, I can't do all this. I got to take away something. Mm. So I end up leaving school and just focus on getting a job and supporting my
take
daughter.
Take care of your kids. Yeah.
She was living in Pennsylvania, so gotcha. That was like a 3-hour drive. 4-hour drive to go see her and do military and then come back, train, work a job, be there on time on Monday, which is impossible to do without being tired. But I found a way to make that work. And then so I did that for like 6 years. And then after my 6 year of the military, I got signed to Lucha Underground through Conan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you'd already been training at that point, and then when that was your first kind of big.
My first match was like in 2009, March of 2009. And I was just doing like little indies.
Gotcha. But your first big break was Lucha Underground.
Lucha Underground. That was in 2015.
How was that? Because for a while, I watched that and I thought it was really, really cool for a bit.
That was another place where this creativity just flowed. Mm. No matter, like, they were just so open to ideas. It's a little tricky because, like, they can't modify or change too much direction because it's written seasonally.
Oh, right.
So if, like, no, oh, yeah, we want this, but. Oh, this person's getting over. Like, we already shot the scenes for this and that.
Gotcha. So we made it like a one big long movie almost, right?
You shot it in like the block of like March. So
gotcha.
So you shot like a 3-month block, March to April, May, and then end in June. Say this character's getting over in December.
Yeah.
Sorry, got to catch you in the next season.
Right.
That was the only tricky part about that. Mm. But it was like, that's where I really started figuring out, okay, that's where I figured I can't just be the same person I was on the indies to here.
Right.
You have to modify, you have to adapt, you have to change and not be afraid of the change and afraid of failing at changing. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are so afraid of getting the negative reception. Once again, criticism, they're afraid of that. So they just stay in their bubble and they just stay the path because
you can't do that though, yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I say I welcome criticism because it's going to, you got to get Kevlar on your chest. You have to build that up. You have to be like, you're shit.
What was your character in Lucha Underground? Because that's some pretty crazy thoughts and ideas. And-
oh, Killshot.
Killshot.
Yeah, that was me. I actually came up with, they had an idea to put me in a mask. They had no idea what the character was going to be because I wasn't a Robert Rodriguez creation. Like a Prince Puma was a Robert Rodriguez creation.
He actually created those characters.
Yeah. So there was like the Robert Rodriguez, the Son of Havoc one was created by him. Prince Puma was, well, I'm trying to think of the more names, but Thunder Rosa's character was one.
Gotcha. Quite a few.
Yeah. Cobra Moon. Yeah. There was like
creations. Cobra Moon, right.
But mine was just like, oh, we just want to put you in a mask, so come up with something. So came up with Killshot, military character, all the stuff. And then the first season, I was like, oh, I feel like I just wrestled matches. I don't feel like there's nothing. There's no meat to me. So after that, I wrote like I took that like that break after we filmed the seasons. It was like writing more depth to the character. And I'm a Metal Gear Solid fan. So I put some espionage in there. I put some like, oh, what if he was like also an informant? And then what if he was all this? So Wade from my character can weave in between different characters.
Right,
so
right.
I was writing my character to be able to like interact with other characters, and they liked that, so they just kind of took all of it and like formed it and made something. And they had me shoot like this vignette of me in the desert like taking down all these like terrorists and like shooting stuff just to build a backstory, and people really generated to that, like they really gravitated towards that character because it was a person. Mm-hmm. A lot of the characters were like Mayan Aztecan
monsters.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
like, exactly,
they
yeah.
were like the, it was a very fantasy. Mm-hmm. And that's cool, but like I was like, okay, I got to do something to be over here.
Right.
Because
right,
everybody's right, going right. over here. And that same with my wrestling style. Everybody was so fluent. And like you had Morrison there. You had Ricochet there. Then you had Jack Evans and Angelico.
Gotcha.
Phoenix, Aerostar, Drago.
You can't compete with that. Yeah.
I can't. Right. There's no way I can like, even if I do, I'm not going to do it as good as them.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to be lost in another wave
yes.
of guys. So they put me in a story with Marty the Moth, and he's a flamboyant, laughable guy, rich, spoiled rich kid, but he's also insane. He's bigger than me. I'm like, I know exactly what to do. So like let's just fight. So we're just throwing blows, like heavy-handed blows. I'm getting back up. He won't go down type of thing. And people were like, yo, we like this. And then they had me, they had this story of like me beating him in like 4 minutes or whatever. And then they were going to blow it off. And we were like, I don't like that. I'm like, I don't like it either. So we went to Krista Joseph, who was the head writer at the time. And we were like, hey, can I not beat him tonight? Can we just like fight? And he takes my dog tags and he keeps going.
Oh,
I think we can build something to this. He was like, yeah, I love it. So I like gave up my me beating him to continue going on this, going with this. And we blew off at the end of the, we finished off the end of that season in a scramble match. He eliminated me with the sister. And then we came in season three doing, it was like the second episode of the Weapons of Mass Destruction match.
Gotcha.
And so now my character is creating matches, a match type. So I'm like, okay, cool. Now there's something growing with this. But that, and then we killed it, had a crazy bloody match with him. He powerbombed me outside of the ring through tables. And we had a good story dichotomy between one another. And people just understood it. They got it. They, like, once again, it got that feel of, okay, this match can't happen between two other people because he feels a certain way about him.
Right.
That nobody else feels a certain way about him. This makes it personal.
That's the connection, yeah.
That's so people connected with that. And he's same way back. There's certain things he won't do to him, but certain things he can do to him. There's certain things this person, another character, would never do in a million years, but he can do it because there's that personal connection.
Right.
So we built that, and that's where it clicked for me. I got to start making personal interactions between every single person. Like, I can't do this to him, but that character could, but this character wouldn't. This character would be, but what would I do?
It has to make sense, right? Yeah,
exactly. So every match of mine just started feeling more personal to the people. And then the Killshot character just grew. And then Dante Fox, the AR Fox character, came in. And I was like, okay, now he's like a former military person in my storyline that I wrote.
I got you.
And they're like, okay, now nobody really can't interact the same way between these two the way anybody else can. Because that's his former military person. That's where it all just started clicking for me. And it just took me to a whole nother level of thinking.
That's great.
Wrestling. Yeah.
What do you think the downfall was for Lucha Underground? Did it just run its course? Or
I feel like funding, because it was growing in popularity, but I don't feel like the studio wanted to grow it along with it. They didn't want to spend the money to grow it. Like, you know, like we should have been touring. We should have been.
With that roster,
With that roster, like the exclusivity of us. Of like those characters, you can't see these characters anywhere else, you know.
Right.
Like some people were just like, "Oh, we want Killshot. We want to book Killshot."
Yeah.
They were like, "Oh, you know, you got to go through them, and it's going to cost X amount of dollars and stuff like that." I'm like, "Okay, well, Shane Strickland's cool, I guess." So,
gotcha.
But that gave me the chance to like, all right, Killshot's over. I need to get Shane Strickland over.
Right. Right.
So I had to work a million times harder to build that. But I feel like they merchandising, they didn't want to spend the money on that, spend or get the cost of spending the money to and forking out the money to pay us more for the percentage of merchandise cost. That was like a fight and a battle. Chavo Guerrero can talk more about this because he was like in those
meetings. Yeah, he was in the office,
Yeah. It would take a lot of money rather than just like, these are TV people, not wrestling
Right,
people.
Of course. They're bean counters.
Yeah. It was just... They were like, oh, it's just like the cost to send, fly all these roster guys from all the way over here, book a venue, do this, do that, get the tickets. So like, these are TV people. You wrestle here, you film here, you're done on after this date. We don't shoot anymore. So, yeah.
Well, as we start to wind down, you're here in AEW now. So what are your kind of your goals? Because you look like $1 million.
Oh, thank you.
You've done a great job since you come in. And like I said, to me, it's like it's amazing that you're here because you have – pretty much everything that I can see that you need to really get to the next level.
I appreciate that. I'm all about exceeding expectations. I look at Twitter, I listen to this, I listen to that. Once again, I filter it and I build that Kevlar to be like, oh, okay. Like, if you're doubting me 3 months in, I'm like, okay, I'm going to really laugh a year from now. I always like making people look stupid at the end of these things because I've always just like... I've always just had to overcome the doubt because they don't see it yet.
Right, right, right.
I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I don't even fight you anymore. I'm just like, all right, cool. So I want to exceed expectations and doubt in all these other things because, like, our roster is, like, ridiculously insanely talented.
It's huge, yeah.
It's stacked. It's talented. Mm-hmm. And they were like, where does Swerve fit in with, like, a Jericho, a Sting, a Punk, a Bryan Danielson? I'm like, wherever the hell I can, wherever mm-hmm. I want to. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you tearing that down? Yeah. Why, you know? Like, why can't you see that? But there's a lot of other people that do, and they're the people that follow me and support me. I appreciate every last one of you. But I want to clear those doubts. Like, they don't see what I can possibly, the potential of what I can bring.
Right.
Like, I want a main event. I want, like, anything, the pay-per-views, TV. I want to win championships. I want to, like, I want to also want to be that bridging gap between entertainment. I want to be like the Odell Beckham of this. You don't just see him on football. You see him,
right,
like, hanging out with, like, J. Cole and Trey Songz and all these other guys on, like, on boats and stuff. You see him, like, doing, like, little commercials here and there. You see him doing this. I don't want, like, the only place to see me is Dynamite and Rampage. You can see me everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, I want that, like, musically, podcasting-wise, sure. You know. Like, I want to be on a Fozzy record. What's up?
Yeah,
you know, I want Jericho on Swerve City podcast. You know, Tony Khan's coming in next week. So, like,
let's
I want to do it. I pay you
back.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like, I want to do it all. You know, there's no limits to this.
Well, last question for you. What's your favorite match that you've ever had? And what's, in your opinion, your best song that you've done so people can go check out some of your rap?
Best song I've done, it was just, put it out. Our album came out March 18th, Swerve City, Tears album. I did a song with Music Soul Child, who's like
Music Soul Child,
R&B legend, like literally, like, done it all in R&B since I've been listening to him since '98.
Okay,
friggin' incredible artist. We did a song called "Not My Fault."
Well, the song is called "Not My Fault."
Yeah, Music Soul Child. The song's called "Not My Fault," featuring Music Soul Child, me and Montezy. We also do the podcast together.
Okay,
our podcast is still on Peacock too. They bought 10 episodes from us. Still there. Not saying, and they mentioned it in the video game too.
You're crossing boundaries, man. See, you're already getting there.
Exactly. But keep putting them doubts out there. All right, cool. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm talking about. But so that's my favorite song. Favorite match. There's a lot of matches I would say like a hold. Like individually close to my heart. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure you have the same thing.
Yeah.
I got to kind of categorize them. Like, definitely the Hell of War match from Lucha Underground, myself versus Dante Fox. That's sort of like, as far as like that character, that's where it was just like, all right, I know it. We did it.
Yeah.
I culminated this character from like being just a guy on the show to this. That's where like my crowning moment for the Killshot character in Lucha Underground. Right. And Independence, Shane Strickland wise, I would say that would be me and Matt Riddle in MLW for the World Championship, MLW World Championship. Confetti fell from the sky and everything when I won the title. And then this is like Riddle was like the guy, still is the guy, but like that's where I feel like, okay, I can hang with anybody.
Right.
I knew it. I knew like Shane Strickland could make money in this industry. That's why I figured it out there. TV wise, television wise, I would say me and Leon Ruff. I'm really proud of that. The Falls Count Anywhere match.
That was at NXT.
Yeah. Really, really proud of that. Cause like coming through the back, it was just like I walked through with just such like my head held high, chest out, sweating, but I'm not tired. Like I just knew. It's like one of those feelings, like, you know, walking through the curtain, you just like. Yeah, like you can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
That was the shit.
Inside, and I know,
knew it was. And you can't, nobody can tell you different. Yeah. Like, that was like, because my Twitter handle Swerve Confident. I felt more confident that day than like nobody could tell me.
That's a catchphrase, man. Get Swerve Confident.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. I market it. I breathe it. Because like I was really unconfident. And then I really had turned the switch over to being just super confident, and it started rubbing off. Like the fans were like, yeah, man, this is the guy. Cause I believed it, and
right.
I flush it out. I try to make sure people feel that. I want to emit that energy.
Well, you are, man. Like I said, you look great. I'm excited to see what you do here in AEW, and it's awesome to get to know you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, brother. That.